And your arms are just shot because you've been paddle stroking all day.
Right.
And then you have to put your hands on this dock and heave yourself out. I got 3/4 of the way out of the boat and got stuck, and they had to come drag me up. And then you walk up this big slope. I don't know. I don't even know how the volunteers dragged my boat out of the water, but I didn't know where it went or how it got to where it went. So somebody else paid attention to where my boat went, and I went and found it later. But
you're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. Whenever trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where our conversations might go. So there aren't too many topics that are off limits for us. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hello, welcome to another edition of Trail Talk Live, Ultramarathon Mindset. I'm your host, Eric Dieter, where we talk about getting your mind and your body on the same page for peak performance and ultimate health. This is Trail Talk. We talk with runners of all kinds, all skill levels, all kinds of experiences, and we're your, just as if we were out on the trail having a casual conversation. That's why it is called Trail Talk. Tonight, I am looking forward to having my guest, a friend of mine, Jordan Zimmerman, who is a trail runner. We have run several times together on trails. We've had some good conversations and wanted to have him on. So I'm going to welcome him to the screen, share the screen with you. Welcome, Jordan.
Hi.
And Jordan, you're sitting in your backyard. I'm looking at what's there. You're not sitting poolside, are you? It's not like you have
no,
a backyard.
No, I wish I had a pool. There's no pool.
Okay, there's no pool. It looked like a life jacket kind of in the background. And it's,
I got my, I don't know. I pulled my kayak out here. I tried to get it in the shot. I don't think it's made very well. But I do have my life vest, the one that you wear, that I wear on the river.
Okay.
And my hat and, my hammock that we slept in while we were out on the river for the MR340. I brought it out there
I saw that in the background and I thought, okay, I wasn't sure it was a pool. I didn't think so, but so anyway, Jordan, welcome. I always kind of started out by saying, as if we were going out on the trail and maybe our first time running together to get acquainted. Tell a little bit about who you are and how you got started in running.
Well, about 2 years ago, I did this MR340 thing, and I don't know. After that, I've been trying to get into running because Angela, my wife, she's a runner. Mm-hmm. So, and I had a real hard time starting. I was pretty heavy. I was almost 270 pounds when I maxed out with how heavy I was. So I tried to start running to try to lose some weight. And it wasn't working out. I don't know how many times I started the Couch to 5K program and absolutely failed at it. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Before I started running, I started to do the kayak thing. I started off by trying to do kayak fishing tournaments and discovered that I really am not good at fishing at all. But I I went out to 5 tournaments, I think, 4 or 5, and I didn't catch not one fish in any of these tournaments.
With the kayak fishing, this is the first time I'd ever heard that they had kayak fishing. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Now, most fishing tournaments, people talk about the bass boats, and you see all these people putting huge amounts of money into it. And then, they go out and everyone has researches where the best bass. So what kind of, do you go for bass in a kayak if you're out in a kayak? Oh, yeah. or is it any kind of fish you can catch?
Well, the tournaments I was in, they were fishing for bass. So, okay. But they had other, consolation prizes too. Like they had, the biggest bass won, or maybe it was the best 5 fish that you caught. And you'd lay them on your board and take a picture and whatever. But they also had the small bass tournament, like whoever caught the smallest one, or there was other, like, you know, other species that you could catch, and whoever, there was crazy rules about that too, and I don't necessarily remember those.
Okay.
Anyway, I was terrible at the fishing, so but I discovered that I really liked pushing the boat around the lake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just paddling around, and you could see all the frogs and turtles and snakes and whatever, and just see the scenery. So I really liked that. So I decided maybe I'll quit this fishing thing and talk about paddling. So
yeah, I'd imagine that. Imagine that the kayak would give you a different view of the lake than sitting in a bass boat with a huge outboard on the back.
And a trolling motor up front to pull you along. And
right.
I don't know, but some of these other guys really got into it. My kayak fishing boat is, you know, like a $400 kayak, 12 feet long, that I got from Dick's Sporting Goods. And then you show up to these kayak fishing, and their boats cost $8,000, and they have the pedal drive, and they sit way up off the water, and they can stand up on them. I can stand up on mine, but I couldn't get back down in the seat because it'd flip over as you tried to sit down.
Okay. Yeah, I would think that kayak would be hard to stand up in. I used to stand up in a canoe, but I always looked at kayaks as being a little bit more skittish than being in a canoe.
Well, the big fishing rigs, they're wide enough and stable enough that you can stand up in them. Some of them you can walk forwards and backwards a little bit. Just,
wow.
I didn't have the kind of money to spend on that. So.
Yeah.
Then one of my buddies, his name is Clinton Marsh, he told me about this river race, you know, the MR 340, 340 miles from Kansas City to St. Charles, Missouri, which is right outside of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's over 4 days, so I was like, I could probably do that. So I signed up. And then I started practicing a lot. So
what made you? I mean, you know, sometimes we make those decisions. So what was in the back of your mind of saying, like, oh yeah, I can do that? What?
Well, I had a moment at work where I decided that I don't know. You know, I'm in law enforcement, so I went to something that really bothered me very deeply, you know, and I realized that I needed to have something that was just for me. So I picked kayaking, and then I did this, you know, I signed up for this. What was in the back of my mind was that I just need to see if I can do it.
Uh-huh.
You know, can my body physically push this kayak 340 miles and, you know,
in the Missouri River. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
In the Missouri River.
Yeah. And for those who are not from who may see this later and are not from the Midwest, the Missouri River is like the smaller second cousin of the Mississippi. It's a pretty long river. It's got barge traffic on it. It's, you know, there's eddies. There's the current moves along. If I remember right, I can't remember what you said, 5 or 6 miles an hour.
I think it would, when I was paddling, I could do 7 miles an hour, give or take.
But okay.
It would push you along between almost 4 and a little over 4, depending on what section of the river. So
okay.
Long straightaways, it could push you up to 4 miles an hour.
Okay.
So Angela always tells me that it's not like running, because you're on the conveyor belt basically. So, but I don't know. So anyway, I just wanted to see, can I do this? Can I, if I can do this, I could probably figure out some other stuff in my life. So I signed up for the MR 340.
So what was training like?
Training was the very first time I went out to train. I was in my fishing kayak, and I started going to the Shawnee Mission Hump Day 5K, which is at Shawnee Mission Lake every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. They dump their kayaks in the water, and they do a 5K on the water. Okay. So I started doing that as much as I could, you know, depending on where I was at work. You know, sometimes you wouldn't get off in time. But anyway, and I'd go out there, and I learned that my fishing kayak is not a good racing kayak. It's made to be long, you know, wide and stable and turn tight. Well, you get out there with some of these guys, and, you know, again, you're competing against their person paddling and their equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in these very expensive, narrow Kevlar boats that can, like, if you sneeze while you're in it, it'll flip over, or it'll go real fast forward. So,
yes. Okay. So, so you have to have a pretty good level of skill, I would imagine, to get in to make those work right.
So, oh yes, you've got your balance has to be great. And I didn't spend the money on that either. But I went out and found a good touring kayak because I thought maybe it would have a dual purpose. I could kind of camp out of it someday if I wanted to, or you know, you could load it up with your tent and your food and stuff and have an adventure in it. So I got this 16 and a half foot Perception Essence kayak, touring kayak.
Okay.
I bought it used off the internet from a guy named J.W. Lyle. That's what I started training in. And then eventually, the first time I ever took it out on the river, I flipped it over. And it was February.
In the river?
Oh, yeah. Right off the boat dock. So I was very lucky.
Well, that's good. Because I
didn't know what I was doing. Uh-huh. I got it. And I never got to take it out on the lake and test it. And I thought, oh, I'll just go out on the river. It'll be fine. Well, it's not. it has all these adjustments that you can make, like the foot pedals and stuff. And it took a lot of tinkering to get the foot pedals just right so my legs wouldn't go to sleep. But when I first sat in it, it wasn't adjusted to me. I mean, I had sat in it in my living room or on the back deck of my house. But I did, and I thought I had it adjusted, but as soon as you get it in the water, you find out where all the little mistakes you made. So I had too many firsts in the first time on the river. First time on the river, first time wearing my dry suit, first time in my kayak on the river.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I guess I took it out for like a 5-minute paddle the first day I got it.
Mm-hmm. But
that was not a good test. So. Anyway, it's February. I get it out on the water, and right off the boat ramp, I'm trying to shimmy around and, you know, move around and get comfortable, it was not going to happen. And I dumped it, and I basically slogged out to the. Fortunately, I was in a backwards eddy, like the water back towards the boat ramp, so it didn't wash me down the river. It washed me off to the shore, and I just climbed out and said, "That's it, guys. I'm done. I'll meet you at the other end." They paddled from where they were going to paddle from Leavenworth to Parkville, I think. And and I was supposed to be the one to drive them back from Parkville. So I got my stuff out of the water and piled up and met them in Parkville and picked them up. So my buddies.
Yeah, so that's about 15 miles or so, I'd imagine, on the river.
Yeah, I think that's about what it is, 15 miles. So.
Yeah. So you were with a group that was getting ready.
Oh, yeah. I have never paddled on the river all by myself. I'm not that brave because it just takes one mistake and you're in the water and then it can get real dangerous real fast.
Yeah, even wearing a life jacket can get dangerous.
Even wearing a life jacket, especially the one that I have, because if I was going to go out on the river by myself, I would wear a different vest. So. Like, I got this very minimalist vest because, you know, basically it looks like an inner tube you wear around your neck. Because my larger vest, when you paddle for a long time, it chafes your underarm where it brushes up against the side of the vest. And I learned that after a while, too. So that's why I got this guy. But this thing, when it hits the water, about a second and a half later, it blows up and it gets really big. Like, it gets so big so fast that it'll stretch your neck a little bit.
Oh, wow.
But when I use this vest, I usually have my backup vest strapped to the back of the kayak, because once this thing's been inflated, it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't you know, it'd be really difficult to reset in the water because you have to have another little knob that's water, you know, it can be, it detects when it hits the water and there's a little thing inside that dissolves and it hits the CO2 cartridge and pops.
Right. Okay.
So it's really hard to reset it in the water, and I never tried. So, but every time I wear this, I carry a second vest so that if it does deploy and I get back in the kayak, I have something else to rely on for safety. Because once this one's done, it's done.
So. Yeah. So, tell me a little bit about you. You did your training. You survived your first spill in the river. So what happened after that?
Eventually, once it started to warm up a little more, we started paddling weekly from Atchison to Leavenworth. So that's 25 or so miles on the river. So,
okay.
And then on the weekends, we would try to do, you know, the equivalent to a long run. So we would try to do, like, we steadily increased it. I did from Caw Point to Lexington, which is about 50 miles over a weekend with another group. I did a night paddle, and me and another guy named Chad Gundy, we went to this first time paddling at night, and I think it was his first time on the river too. And that was my first experience paddling with a barge. And I think we went from Caw Point to Labonite, which is 20 or so miles, I think.
At night.
And man, at night. And that was the first time I ever encountered a barge. And it was very scary. It's like riding on the river, but it's inside a washing machine, because that it's the upriver barges. And that barge happened to be an upriver one. And it really churns the water up. At first, it's just up and down. You know, the waves go up and then they go back down and then you're okay. But once the waves start hitting the shoreline, then they come back and then you're up, down, left, right, up, down, left, right. And your front of your boat's making a big circle and it's splashing over the hull and into your lap and in your face. And the key is to keep moving, because I did a lot of research after my first dump on how to not dump your boat. So I dumped it at Wyandotte County Lake too, actually, in the cold. I don't know, man, it was really cold that day. It was 30 degrees out, and the lake wasn't froze over, so I put it on the lake, and somebody came out of the dock in their bass boat, and they, you know, in the no wake zone, and they were making some wake, and it hit me broadside, and I thought I could ride it out, and I couldn't, so another bass boat came out and rescued me. That was when I decided I needed to learn how to get back in the boat while I was in the water. So
how do you, I mean, do you get back in the boat while it's in the water, and then it's full of water then, I imagine. Is that right?
I have a bilge pump.
Like, okay.
It's a hand operated. It looks like those water guns where you stick the nozzle in the water and draw up and then you point it out and spray it.
Okay.
Except at the top of this one, there's a nozzle. So when you're pumping it, shoots it out the side.
Okay.
And it'll push, I don't know, a gallon every, I don't know, 45 seconds if you're pumping it fast enough.
So, okay.
But the kayak will float absolutely full of water. It'll still float.
Yeah, that's good. I used to do canoes, and I had an aluminum canoe, and I know I could fill it full of water and it wouldn't sink completely. It would still be right at the top of the water. And
just makes it really hard to steer.
Well, a lot of times on hot summer days, I'd put it in the pond and fill it full of water, and just could sit there and kick back and relax. But then, of course, I didn't have the pump you were talking about. I had to drag it to the shore and turn it up to let it drain.
Oh yeah.
Talk about your race. It's kind of it's over 4 days and 340 miles. What was that like?
Yeah. Well, I made a goal was that I wasn't going to try to be a hero and get in the. They have a club. I don't know. There's kind of an unofficial club you can get into by doing it in less than 50 hours or something like that. And I wrote up a plan where we probably could have made that, but. First day in the water, and I was like, well, that plan's out the window. I'm just going to try to survive. You have to finish it in 88 hours. They have a boat called the Reaper that follows the end of the race, and if you fall behind the if you fall behind the Reaper, they pick you up and take you out of the race.
So okay.
It has to do with their insurance and permitting and stuff that they, you know, get to be out of the water after a certain amount of time. So anyway,
is the time like cumulative? Like when you stop for the night, is the time stop or is it?
Time keeps going. 88 hours period.
Okay, 88 hours period. Okay.
So yeah, and I would stop, and the original plan was to, you know, stop at Glasgow and try to get just over 100 miles the first night. Well, that didn't work out because once it got dark, I was too fatigued and I don't remember where we stopped exactly. Angela would probably be better at that. I guess I should have pulled up the maps to research. But anyway, we stopped a little bit shy of 100 miles on the first day. And instead of just sleeping the, you know, 2.5 hours like we originally planned, I slept for 6.
So, okay.
Yeah, Angela was my ground crew, so she would go to the boat ramps ahead of me, and she would set up these hammock stands that are behind me here. She'd set that up. She'd set up both of them and have something to eat for me, or know where everything was, so that she could direct me to the restrooms or to get something to eat, or where you would go stand around the fire and talk for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Angela
just chimed in. She says that you spent the night at Miami the first night.
Yeah, Miami. Okay. So,
thank you, Angela.
I think we slept 6 hours. We paddled from like, I don't know, whatever time the race started, like 8 o'clock in the morning till 11 at night, and that was pretty much what we did every day. We'd get started, you know, just as the sun was coming up, and paddle until 11 o'clock at night. As a matter of fact, one of the boat ramps that we got out on for the night was not an official stop for the MR340. You know, they had a bunch of official stops. The first one's like Lexington, Missouri. You could stop there, and they had services available, like what you would find in a trail race at an aid station.
Okay.
So, except much bigger, right? And it wasn't like the aid station at the trail race. The difference was you had to have money to buy the stuff because they have vendors at the thing. So Chick-fil-A's there, and they're selling you chicken sandwiches, or the Cub Scouts would be there selling hot dogs and hamburgers, or one of these places was like, it was an RV campground, and they had a restaurant, kind of. And there was actually a big food truck, like a Thai food truck, and everybody upsold this Thai food truck that was so awesome. I didn't see anything I wanted there. So.
Okay.
But
was there also your ground crew could Angela could give you food as well? It was that.
Oh yeah, we. You
know, so it was all it was both.
Yeah, oh yeah. So I carried food with me on the boat so I could fuel while I was paddling, and I had, you know, like I bought these little squeezy bags, like what your like baby food comes in with the nozzle. You pull off the lid and mm-hmm. stuck it out in the tube. Well, I bought some refillable ones and I filled them with mashed potatoes. I had chicken soup in some of them, and I had some kind of like I found some energy like do-it-yourself stuff on the internet, recipe made out of dates and honey and I don't remember what else, but all kinds of stuff. And grind it all up and put it in this thing, and it was so sugary. Like
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I almost couldn't eat it. Dates and honey in a combination like that would be pretty sweet, I would imagine.
Yeah, there was some other stuff in there too, but I don't remember exactly what it was. But I didn't eat very much of it, that's for sure. So we froze all of this stuff so that we kept it in our cooler, and I would basically give Angela the pack of stuff that I had, and then she would give me a fresh pack, and I would throw it in the bag before we would get back on the river. So I had to figure out some way to make this warm. So I had this mashed potatoes, and that was the hardest thing trying to figure out. I tried to figure out like you know, I could get some of those MRE heaters, but they're really expensive. So eventually I come up with, you know, there's a solar cooker, but that thing's not going to survive on the river because it's made out of glass. But you know what? If I bought a black vinyl pencil bag and laid it in the sun, that gets pretty hot. So sure enough, that worked. You know, you would put your frozen, absolutely brick solid mashed potatoes in this little pouch. You know, they, you know, like 6 inches tall and 4 inches wide, and just cram full. And you would stick it in this black pencil bag and strap it to the deck of your kayak. And 30 minutes later, they wouldn't be piping hot, but they would be like warm, perfect to eat. Squeeze it out of there and you know, refuel yourself.
So. Yeah. Well, I know my experience is most runners who run ultras have a vest. And so you're, anything that you put in the vest usually ends up warm from your body. So
yeah, I have a vest.
So. So you said you finished in the under the cutoff time. How did you feel at the end of it?
Oh, I was absolutely whooped. The fourth day was the worst. And it was the shortest day. I think we were done by 1 o'clock in the afternoon, give or take. Angela might know better because I was pretty out of it by the end there. And every place else you stop on the river is a boat ramp. So you pull your kayak up and there's volunteers there at the end of the boat ramp ready to drag your kayak out of the water. Mm-hmm. And when you get to St. Charles, that's not how it goes. There's a little bitty dock sticking out in the water. And there's some like grassy sloping area downriver a little bit. And I thought that that was where I was supposed to go. So I just paddled right past the finish line.
Okay.
And had to back paddle to get to it. And then, you know, you pull up to this little dock. And it, on me, it was just, it rode in the water just a little bit below my shoulder. So there's two volunteers on the dock. And they reach down in the water. They lay on their bellies and they hold your boat up against the dock, and then you're expected to climb out. I've been paddling for 4 days now, three and a half days.
And sitting down as well, right?
Yes, and sitting down. Your legs have gone tired, and my hamstrings were in pretty good shape because when you sit in the kayak, it's like sitting flat on the floor with your feet straight out in front of you. So my hamstrings were in good shape, but my legs would go numb by the time I would get to wherever we were going, almost numb. So, and your arms are just shot because you've been paddle stroking all day, right? And then you have to put your hands on this dock and heave yourself out. And I don't know, I was like a walrus trying to beach itself at that point. So, and somebody had to come. I got 3/4 of the way out of the boat and got stuck, and they had to come drag me up. And then you walk up this big slope. I don't know. I don't even know how the volunteers dragged my boat out of the water, but I didn't know where it went or how it got to where it went. So somebody else paid attention to where my boat went, and I went and found it later. But getting out of the water was really tough, but I made it in 80 hours and some change, or 81 hours and some change. So I still had, you know, at least 7 hours left to make it.
Okay.
And that's where I kind of decided, you know what, if I'm going to do this again, I need to lose some weight, because pushing 200, and I guess by then I was probably 250, because I lost some weight. Give or take. Anyway, and I decided I probably ought to lose weight, and that's what got me into running.
Okay.
Because the kayak, I really, really love the kayaking, and I wish I was kayaking right now, actually, but the logistics behind kayaking is really hard sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you get in the river, the Missouri especially, you have to have somebody drop you off upstream and then pick you up downstream.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have to have two people to go, so that one person parks their car at the get out, and then and the other person drags, you know, people in kayaks to the put in, and then you have to go back and forth twice.
Yes.
So, or if you go to the lake, you still got to hook up your trailer and strap your kayak down and bring all this gear. And I don't know. I think I showed up to Shawnee Mission Lake Hump Day one day, and I had packed up everything except my paddle. So I showed up to the race with no propulsion system.
So, kind of like showing up to a run without your shoes.
That's exactly right. So I am not willing to do that. So I sat on the sidelines that day and helped them record times as people would come in. So, but I don't know. That was embarrassing. I showed up without my paddle. It's still hanging on the wall when I got back in the garage. So,
yeah. So you said you started running to lose weight. What was your strategy? How did you get started, and what did you do? Combination between eating and running.
Well, yes, I started doing research on the keto diet, and then just one day I decided that I'm just going to do it and go keto. So it was the day after my birthday in 2018.
Okay.
So yeah, I wanted my birthday cake, so I had that, and then I started keto. So, and at that time, I think, I don't know, I might have been in the 260s or something like that, and then I started the keto diet, and then all of a sudden, I started to feel real good, and then I finished Couch to 5K, and then I decided I wanted to run an ultra marathon, so I picked a 50K. I did a little research and found the flattest one I could, and that was the Rails to Trails Extravaganza down in Ottawa.
Okay.
October 2019. So I completed Couch to 5K in about November of 2018, and I was running. I ran a 50K.
In 2019, a year later. Okay.
Yeah. October. So yeah, almost a year later. So I trained all summer running on that levee trail in Lawrence in the heat, direct sunlight. But I used a lot of the lessons I learned on the river, because on the river there's very little shade ever.
Mm-hmm.
It's wide, and there's not a lot of trees that reach out across. And if there were, the barges would take them out anyway. So mm-hmm. Just bake in the sun. I wear a white shirt and as much white clothing as possible.
Uh-huh. So did you, that's what you did when you did this 50K?
Oh yeah. It was kind of cold when we did the 50K. So I was bundled up a little bit, but yeah, I got out there and I finished next to last, but I finished under the bar. So
That's good.
So, and the 50K was really tough, because I had this training plan and I stuck to it pretty good. And in the end of the training plan, every time I would get to 14 miles, my knee would start to ache really bad. So I think the most I ever ran to training for the 50K was right at about 20.
Okay.
And then I can grin and bear it for 10 more miles.
For 10 more miles. Yeah.
And that's what I did.
That's what you did.
I shaved my leg from mid shin to mid thigh so I could wear KT tape to tape up my knee. And that it really did support my knee. However, when we made the drop bags, Angela had a drop bag and I had a drop bag. And at some point I didn't get my KT tape into my drop bag at the halfway point.
So, oh, wow. Okay.
And her, I don't remember where, you know, there was another place where you could pick up drop bags, but anyway, so I didn't have my KT tape and it busted right about the halfway point. So I got another, I don't know, 5 or 6 miles. And then the last 12 or so miles, my knee started to hurt. And I think the last 6 or 8 miles, I basically step dragged in because my knee was really unhappy. I wasn't going to let the little pebbles and rocks and roots and stuff that were on the trail beat me. So
right.
I dragged it in. Then I didn't run for 2 weeks because I tried to let my knee heal up a little bit. So
now you've done another 50K, I think, since then, haven't you?
I did the Rockin' K Marathon.
The Rockin' K Marathon. Okay. Because I knew, and was that during the COVID?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember seeing it on Facebook that you were out there, and in March, I believe, wasn't it? Or?
It was April.
April, okay.
So, yeah. It was, so it, like, I'm not good with the dates thing. I'm pretty sure it was April, and it was perfectly nice out there. Like, the weather was perfect. It didn't rain, didn't go crazy. And the way we had to do it was, you know, since they had canceled the race and made it kind of a virtual race, we discovered that the park was still open and the rental of the cabin that we secured was still available. So we just went out there as if it was the real race. And the actual race day, Angela raced it, and I stayed at the cabin with the kids, and we went out and did stuff. Like, we went to Mushroom Rock Park and looked at the mushroom rocks and did some other stuff. And then we met her at the halfway point and fed her some stuff and, you know, gave her a little aid station out of the bed of my pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
And we're at the finish line, and Cindy Rykoff was there too, actually. So,
yeah, she said that was when it was on fire and there was a controlled burn that got out of control. So you had part of the trail was. I think was it on fire when you were running?
Yes, when Angela was running, I don't know how much of the fire she actually went through, but it was breathing down her neck, and she had met up with some other runners, and they figured their way out. They actually pulled Cindy off the course.
Okay. Okay.
She went through, so. But they didn't catch up to Angela. She pushed on through.
She pushed
on through. Met her at the finish.
Yeah. Angela just chimed in and says it was first weekend in April. And so they had that. And the Rangers were the ones that pulled them off the trail.
Yep. So Angela made it without getting pulled off by the Rangers. So we basically sat there at the end and waited for everybody else that we knew was out there. And then the next day, I was just praying that it would be open enough so that I could go through. And man, I ran through some very desolate places on the Rockets Gay Marathon.
There's
pictures of where it's just black, and the only thing you can see is the trail because it's been worn down, and it's about as wide as your foot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sand, so it didn't blacken, but the grass on either side. And I'm running by logs that are still smoldering and actually have active flames on them. So it burned up a good portion of the park. So.
Yeah, and if anybody hears this that is not in the Midwest, that's a thing that ranchers will do is burn the grass every spring. The old dead grass, burn it off and allows the new grass actually a better start. And so if you go out to west of Kansas City, west and a little bit farther west, and even sometimes around here, you'll see fires burning. That is a thing. I've been involved in. I lived west of Topeka, and we had our land bordered 40 acres, and the pasture behind us. All the neighbors would get together, and we'd have a burn night usually. It's an interesting experience to see that. After it's burned, it's a pretty desolate look. You know, it's just black and charred.
Yeah. It's black ground as far as the eye can see. It was pretty amazing. So,
yeah.
And then I was worried about smoke inhalation because there was places where, you know, stuff's smoldering downwind from you and the smoke's blowing across the trail. So, you know, I just try to hold my breath as long as I could and push through those areas. I don't know. I can't really take credit for the Rock and Cave Marathon because I missed a mile of it. There's a place right in the north end of the course where you're supposed to turn south and go down one side of a canyon and then cross over and then run back north on the other side. Well, there's the way the trail is set up, there's a chicken exit that goes across the north end so you don't have to run down the canyon and back up the canyon.
Okay.
And I totally missed the turn. So when I got to the halfway point, I was a mile short, and Angela's like, well, I think you're missing a mile somewhere. And I'm like, I have no idea. I followed the text. Sure enough, when I got to the end, I got 25.1 miles. And then I was at the finish line, and I was like, I think I'm done. Like, I don't got another mile in me now that I've been here and sat down for a minute.
Yeah, there's something about it. If you're in your mind, once you've finished, your mind will shut your body down, and you're like, no,
And I'm not good at, I don't know, I'm not good at loop courses. If you get back to the truck, my body wants to, like, I have a hard time turning that part of my brain off. Like, I think that's why I like paddling on the river, because you get on the boat ramp and you get on the river and you're pretty well committed until the next boat ramp. Like, you can't just pull over anywhere and get out. I mean, they told us to be prepared to walk out from the MR-340. If you crash or your boat gets sunk, that you could, you know, be prepared to walk out if you pull off somewhere. So I had some very extensive maps that showed what, you know, the channel of the river, and then what's beyond, like, where's the closest road, so I can approximate where I was with my map and some little bit of orienteering and figure out if I had to ditch it right here, where could I walk out to and get help? So there's a huge sections of the river with zero cell phone service.
Right. Cindy says that all but two of you who are there, who ran that course, all but two of us went out, ran and missed the bluff section. So she says you're not the only one who missed that.
Hey, I didn't know that. So I'm glad I was the only one. Once I got started on that course, I did not see another human being until I got to the halfway point, when Angela and the boys met me with some snacks. And since I was a mile off, I beat them to the halfway point. I got there and they weren't there because they weren't expecting me for another 15 or 20 minutes. So.
Well, and it's kind of like the opposite of what happens on a lot of trail races. Most of the time, if you're on a trail race and you get lost, you end up doing extra miles. And that's, or not get lost, but if you miss a turn, if you get off course, usually that means you get bonus, you get to run more.
There were some sections out there where if you would have missed the next flag, maybe you could have got extra miles, but I don't know. I missed a turn and I got minus miles. So whatever. And I guess towards the end of the last 10 or so miles, that's when I started to see other people, because, you know, I'm right out there running on a Sunday. There was nobody out there. So got a little creepy, actually. I got into the prairie land of the Rock and K, and I was like, you know what? I bet you know, you're standing at the top of a hill and there is nothing but grass in a cell phone tower. Like, that's where you could make cell phone calls because you could see the tower.
You
could pick up. So, and I'm like, you can't see anything. I'll bet you there's not another human being within 2 miles of me right now. So I don't know. It gave me a little bit of agoraphobia there for a minute. And then I was like, screw it. I just got to knuckle down and keep moving.
You know, it is there's something about being out. I mean, a lot of us who are trail runners who, you know, that are in our part of the world, we're running in the woods. And even if you do get out into the country, it's rolling hills and there's trees. But Western, you know, you get west of Topeka, out into the Flint Hills and beyond. And if you get out into that country and you stand up, it is very desolate. And standing, if you're in the car, I mean, you know, everyone says driving across Western Kansas is so boring, because there's just, you know, miles and miles of nothing. But there's a different feeling. There's a different feeling when you're in the car. You know, it's just kind of boring. If you're without a car, I mean, like you are with running, or I have ridden across Kansas on a bicycle several times, and I experienced that kind of feeling when I was on the bicycle. There wasn't anybody else on the road. There was no cars on the road. It was I was on a highway, but there was nobody in sight, and it was like being on a, you know, almost a tabletop. It was just, there was this vast expanse of area all around you, And it is a weird feeling. It's hard to describe that feeling if you haven't been there. But yeah, agoraphobia is kind of that. There's a sense that you feel so small, and that everything around you is so spread out. You feel like a little speck on the surface of the earth. That's kind of the feeling that I had anyway.
That's really the feeling I had in the middle of, I don't know, it's like I could see one hill off to my right along the path that was taller than what I was standing on, but every other direction seemed to be just grass as far as you could see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I got a little, just a little bit daunting, and then I'm like, you know what, I need to stop focusing on that out there and focus on the next 10 feet and just keep doing that. Eat up 10 feet, 10 feet, 10 mm-hmm. feet, 10 feet. Mm-hmm. Finally, you get back into some of the wooding area, and it's much better. So,
yeah, there is a little bit of a security in kind of feeling where the boundaries are. And, you know, it's like being out there, there's no boundary. And you kind of lose your sense of self.
Yeah. Well, and I had the weirdest encounter with a deer out there on the rock and gay. There's a wood line that was pretty thick and I couldn't see through it, and the trail kind of zigs through it. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, I look off to my left and there's two deer charging directly at me. And then me and the deer both had the same reaction. We just kind of like, and then the deer went off in a different direction. Like all the hair on the back of my neck is standing up. And the deer in the front was big. I mean, maybe it just appeared big because it caught me off guard and I got the huge adrenaline dump.
Mm-hmm.
From, you know, large thing coming at me quickly.
So were the deer running on the trail? I mean, that.
No, they were running perpendicular to the trail.
Okay.
Running along the tree line. And I think something spooked them off to the whatever direction that was and it spooked them towards the trail, and we both had the same expression on our face, and then they turned, and I kept going on the trail, but they really freaked me out, so I thought that was pretty neat. So, weird encounters out on the trail. So
what's ahead for you? What are your you have anything in the works that you're planning on?
No, not this year. I think this year what I'm trying to do is build up my aerobic base a little bit. I'm trying to train with the MAF method, you know, real low heart rate, try to stick to about, I don't know, 140 beats a minute, and just build up my athletic base so I can try to do something better maybe later in the year. I thought about doing the Nighthawk, but I've decided that maybe I'm too tripsy during the daytime and it'd be worse at night. You get out the rocks and roots and I'm pretty stumbly. So,
mm-hmm. Well, and yeah. And the Nighthawk is for people who aren't local, the Nighthawk is a race that starts at eight o'clock at night. And if you do the 50K, you run until the cutoff is 6 a.m. the next morning. So you run all night, and I did that. I did the Nighthawk last year. It was very hot, and there are a lot of rocks and roots. Yeah, that's an interesting experience. Running at night is a whole different animal than running during the day.
And then for 2021, I might really considering putting in for the MR340 again. It wasn't in the cards this year because last year, 2019, it got canceled. So there was tons of deferments. They had four teams race in the MR340 last year, and they did it in November.
Okay.
Because of all the flooding and everything last year. Uh-huh. So they just made the conditions like there was no boat ramps to stop at because they were all underwater. Or if they weren't underwater, they were just covered in mud and you couldn't – support couldn't get to you, so
and
the water was really fast, really, really fast. Like I,
yeah, the river was at flood. The river was at flood stage for a long time last year, I think.
Yeah, really long time. And then, you know, I really wanted to go paddle, but every time I would go out and look at the river, you could just see the water just zinging by. And I'm like, you know what? If you missed your boat ramp on the first try, you would just have to go to the next one because you'd have to beach and drag your kayak upstream, like slogging through the mud if you could find some. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It was just too nerve-wracking. So I haven't actually been out on the kayak a lot lately. Really, I'm starting to miss it a lot.
Yeah.
COVID has really put a damper on everything. I can't get a boat pass for the kayak because it was difficult to get one during the COVID. And now that it's kind of lifted, I could go get one. I just haven't yet. So, and my kayak trailer, I decided to renovate it a little bit. So it's all taken apart.
So what the boat pass is for the various lakes around, or do you have to have a boat pass in the river as well?
No, not in the river. In Wyandotte County Lake and Shawnee Mission Park Lake, you have to have a boat pass from the county to paddle there.
So from each county, and those are in two different counties. So yeah, okay.
Right. So Wyandotte County Lake, their boat pass is about, I think it's $55 if you're a non-county resident this year. And the last couple of years in Shawnee Mission, it's $30. You get it at Walmart. Stick a sticker on the back of your boat so the squirrel police don't write you a ticket.
Yeah. So. And that's then good for the year. Is that for any boat, any kind of boat that you have? Is like paddleboard?
Yeah, any kind of paddleboard, anything. If it floats and you can sit on it, you're supposed to have a boat pass.
Okay.
So I wish they would kind of drop that for the human-powered crafts because, you're out there competing with, there was one time I went out on Wyandotte County Lake and there was a guy out there just rip-roaring around in this big ski boat, doing figure eights and back and forth real fast. And I tried to keep a wide berth of that guy because I did not want to end up underneath his hull.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really think he was paying that much attention. He was kicking up all kinds of wake and, by that time, I had learned how to get through it without getting dumped over. But,
yeah.
So.
When there is not.
Because if they're going to hit me, they're going to hit the shoreline too. So.
Yeah. Well, Wyandotte County Lake is not very big. So, they don't allow skiing. I'm surprised they allow ski boats.
They're not supposed to be out there. They're not supposed to be tearing around the lake like crazy. So. I didn't call them in. Because I did not want to stop paddling long enough to get the phone out and make a phone call because I thought I would get tipped over.
Get dumped over, yeah. Well, that's cool. So next year might be a possibility for you for the race down the river. How has the running helped you? I mean, you say you haven't been paddling much. I mean, have you noticed any difference? Does the running help feed into your kayaking strength, and does vice versa? Because I know a lot of runners work on their core, which is kind of what you use with paddling. I mean, is there a crossover benefit between the two?
Yes, I think that any core work I think the core work from paddling probably helps out the running more than the other way around, because I think that the running is, I've lost 70 pounds since I started paddling. I think that's going to help me out immensely because I fit in the kayak better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not pushing so much weight. Basically it's like taking 70 pounds of gear out of your boat.
Right.
So it's going to go a little faster, I think. I don't know. I feel like maybe I've lost a little bit in the upper body from the paddling because I haven't been doing that so much. I think it will come back real fast, though.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing I think maybe that running hurts is that, like all runners, I probably should stretch more, right? So, especially in the hamstrings area. So when you sit, if you sat on your kitchen floor and put your feet on the cabinets and then tried to push off the cabinets, that's how you steer the boat, because I have a rudder on the boat
and
you steer
it with
your feet. So, but that's basically what you're doing in the boat. And sitting on the floor is very uncomfortable, so stretching out your hamstrings makes it better. So maybe I need to stretch out the hamstrings better so the boat experience will be better. And we'll see how it goes. I did herniate myself during the MR340. A few days or a week later, I noticed that my belly button would poke out a little bit.
Okay.
If I would, you know, reach up and stretch in the morning, and I'd feel it, whoop, and my belly button would poke out. So I had to have a little surgery to repair that. So.
Wow.
And I'm pretty sure I know.
From the core work, from the work from paddling?
Yeah, me and another guy, is Chad Gundy. Something happened, and he stayed at the boat ramp a little bit longer. So I paddled down river a little ways, and I noticed that he wasn't catching up, and I didn't want him to paddle by himself. So, I didn't paddle the MR340 by myself. I paddled with Chad Gundy, Anchi Day, who is he's kind of notorious because in 2017 he completed the MR340 in like a 10-foot Pelican boat you get from Walmart. Sean. And Ralph Broom. And then another guy, he trained with us a bunch. His name's Clinton Marsh. But on our last long training run, he got a little overheated and had to be hospitalized with some heat injury.
Wow.
And then he opted to not go because he really did hurt himself. Because we paddled from Paw Point to Lexington, so 50 miles or so. Maybe we pushed out to the next stop, which was 75, he just got injured and couldn't make it with us. And I'm hoping he'll go next year so we can do it together. So,
yeah.
But
so you paddle all day, or is like, do you ever stop and just float with the current?
Yeah, I would take some breaks, but, we would try to stop every 25 miles because I wanted to get up and move my legs around because I did not want to have like blood clots or something form in my legs and get an injury that way. So mm-hmm. We would get out and try to walk around. We tried to keep it towards like, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, but towards the end of the day, it would kind of be like 30 minutes or 45 minutes because it felt so good to get out of the boat and get the feeling in your legs back and your hips would start to ache after a while. I don't know, I got the worst case of diaper rash that I've ever had in living memory. Mm-hmm.
So you can chafe while you're sitting in a kayak as well as when you're running. Well,
it's worse because I sat in the kayak and after the first whatever, I don't know, it was long ways. It was in the second day, so we got to the first 25-mile mark, and my tailbone was hurting a little bit. So I rolled up a towel and stuck it on the seat and sat on that. Well, the towel got wet, and then I was wet,
mm-hmm.
and then diaper rash.
So okay, yeah, yeah.
He got to the next stop, and I was like, Angela, you gotta find the nearest pharmacy or Walmart and get me some Desitin. So that I can survive the rest of this race. And then I got back in the boat and paddled on to the next one. Well, we showed up at the next one and she's like, well, there wasn't really anything between the last boat stop and this one where I could get that kind of stuff. There's no Walmart, there's no little towns with a pharmacy or something that were, or if there was, they wouldn't open. So, and there's no cell phone service along the river either, the route that we mm-hmm. planned out for her to take to the boat ramps. So you can't change the routing plan on Google to go find something else because, you know, there's cell phone service. So it just tells you to get right to the next mm-hmm. boat ramp.
Yeah.
I got to that one and I was like, I don't know if I could sit on this diaper rash any longer. But I sucked it up, sat in the boat, and you know, you're shimmying around trying not to sit on it, trying to lean over to one side, and then the boat wants to turn this way all the time. You mm-hmm. lean over to the other side and you just zigzag back and forth the river trying to get a little relief, and finally the next stop we got to, she had some Desitin for me. It was pretty amazing to get a little bit of relief from the diaper rash.
Yeah. And then, but once you get the chafing, it's like that doesn't go away like by the next day. So you had to deal with that for the rest of the trip?
Oh, yeah, the rest of the trip I had it. And then, I don't know, like there's not a lot of showering going on between boat stops either. So I didn't get a shower till the third day. And it was so bad. Like at the end of this trip, the bag. Okay, so you got to think about hydration, right? When you're running, you can wear a backpack or carry a water bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, water bottle's not big enough to go, you know, 4 hours in the boat or whatever in the direct sunlight. It gets warm, it gets disgusting, and then it runs out. So I had a 3-liter Camelback that basically sat in my lap, and then this, you know, I would pick up the straw and drink from it as we paddled down the river, and that would last me till about the next boat stop, and then Angela would have another one ready to go, and we'd mm-hmm. swap them out because I had two. So, so we weren't, you know, she was reloading the camel bladders as we go. But when we got done, that backpack that I had it in, it was so bad. We got rid of it. It smelled so bad, like the river water soaking into it all day long, and it just never got clean. And like we had it in the back of the Pathfinder with all the rest of my river smelling stuff, and it didn't make it home. Like, it got thrown out. That Pathfinder got so stinky because of all the wet stuff, and like I changed clothes at every other boat ramp as much as I could. And
well, and I would imagine there wasn't really running water at the boat ramp.
No,
and you didn't want to wash. You didn't want to wash in the river water either.
No, because the river water is bad. Like I had some hand sanitizer in my backpack, and one time I put the straw from the bladder down, and somehow it ended up in the water. And I was like, how am I going to disinfect this thing? Cause it's been in the yucky river water for God knows how long. Like I couldn't remember how long it had been since I'd taken a drink. So I just put that hand sanitizer in my hand.
Good thing you had that.
Yeah. So I had something. So but that made it didn't taste very good, but I didn't feel like I would catch anything from whatever's living in the river. So,
well, it's coming up on about an hour, and I try to keep these conversations to around an hour. So I just want to say thanks and one of the reasons I wanted to have you talk about your kayaking experience is because I know a lot of us who are ultra runners will have other things that we do besides and the fact that there are other endurance activities out there besides running ultra marathons. And I know some of the stories I know you told me about your river experience, and I thought it would be worthwhile to have you come on Trail Talk and talk about what it's like to be kayaking for 4 days. And So do you think you would ever do like a multi-day run event, like a similar?
I don't know. Maybe like a Ragnar, where you can stop running and rest for a while the other guy goes and runs. But even that, I don't know. I don't know that if I can recover fast enough to run multiple days in a row. So I would like very much to do 100 someday.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't feel like I'm anywhere near ready for that. So,
yeah, there's a lady that I know who I run with. Her comment about running is that it doesn't get interesting until after the first 60 miles. And I think some of the things that you went through on the river, the mental aspect of paddling for that long would serve you well in a hundred mile trail race. And it's just there's the physical side of it is one thing, but the mental side is there. I think you probably got things going
learning,
on.
Learning how to find relief in even the smallest little thing. Before you get to the finish, like a mile out or something like that, there's three bridges coming up into St. Charles. And I remember it was very hot that day. And as you're paddling along, you get into the shade of the up the bridge, and I would just lay the paddle on my lap and lay back and let just enjoy the shade, because I've been 4 days with no shade on the river.
Yeah.
And I would just try to, I'm going to soak in as much of this shade as I can until, you know, until the occlusion of the sun is over, and then I'm going to paddle real hard to the next one. So, I don't know. So yeah, it's yeah. learning to find comfort when there isn't a lot. That's, I think that's part of what I learned out there. Like, there's nothing like getting to the boat ramp and Angela brings out the Ziploc bag with our towel out of the cooler, mm-hmm. and then you get to pack your face with this super cold towel, wipe the sweat off. That was before I learned the camp shower thing.
Yeah. Before we go, talk a little bit about that. I think that's a pretty ingenious. Unless you want to patent it and sell it.
No, I don't want to patent it and sell it because I didn't come up with it. I'll go grab it real quick right here. So I saw this at the Shawnee Mission Hump Day 5K. Somebody come out there one day with one of these pump sprayers, and he was using it to hose off his boat after we got out of the lake.
You know, so those are normally, it would be what you'd like for, I call it a garden sprayer.
Yeah, garden sprayer.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? It would be really nice if you could rinse your face off. So I went and found it. Like, went on sale at Walmart the next day. I bought this 2-gallon one for like, I don't know, $7. And then I put a longer hose on it. And then I found some adapters so that you could attach a hose thing. And then you pump
that's
it
just
up.
A regular, that's just a regular sprayer like you have on the end of a garden hose.
That's right. And it's, yeah. You know, it was the, I went to Home Depot and I found the cheapest one that I could find. Like, this, I think this thing costs $3, right? So, mm-hmm. like, you can't drop because it will break. But I used to have a styrofoam cooler that you would put some ice in it. You would put the pump sprayer in the cooler, surround it with ice, and then, you know, when you would get done running or whatever, you'd pump it up, and then you'd put it on mist and mist your face and get all the salt off, and it felt so good. So, but I've got this new cooler, and it's awesome. But now I've attached a valve stem to it, and then I have a power inflator to pump up tires out in the car, and you can set it for a certain PSI, and it'll stop at that. So you pump this thing up to about 30 pounds, and it will really spray out of there.
So is that something you can carry in your kayak, or is that be something your ground crew would have with you?
Have to be with the ground crew, or you know, you leave it with your truck. So I take it with me when I go to Waiko and paddle out there. Waiko's 6 miles if you paddle the shoreline.
Okay.
And you can get a little more when the river's or when the lake's a little more full. You can go around. Like if you could start running at Shelter 2, you can see that little bridge that you go over, mm-hmm. the metal bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can actually paddle your kayak around underneath that.
Okay.
If the lake has enough water in it. So, you know, you just leave it at your truck, and then it's nice, refreshing, spray your face off.
Mm-hmm.
with the sprayer. It feels good to spray your legs off, too. Like, you get all the dust and grime off, and, you know, I don't know, maybe that cold water reacts with your legs a little bit, your muscles, and, it just feels really nice to hose off a little bit.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good idea. And I know you've brought that on some of the group runs that we've been involved in and with some of the heat and humidity we've faced. It's like, it's really refreshing to be able to spray some water on you, because there's usually not that availability when we're done running.
Or if you get real muddy at Waiko, it's strong enough to blow the mud off of you. I don't know.
Oh, uh-huh.
For the most part, you might scrub a little.
That's good to have. There's a few places where you can get water at the lake as well that I've stuck my legs and my feet under to get washed off. But yeah, it would be nice to just have your own source.
That hydrant at Shelter 10, I've straight stuck my whole head underneath that thing.
Well, Jordan, thanks for taking time to talk with us. I appreciate it. And enjoyed sharing stories about your experiences running as well as on the river. And so
I appreciate it. All right, well, thanks for inviting me. I'm really glad
it's been fun. It's been fun. So
I'm pretty novice runner, so not quite. Have I made 2 years yet? I think so.
Yeah.
Almost.
You made 2 years.
2 years of running. November 2018 is when I feel like I really became a runner because I finished the Couch to 5K program. So many times since then.
There's a lot of discussion on some of the places on Facebook as when do you really become a runner? And most of us who have experienced it say once you decide to start running and you run, you're a runner. It doesn't matter whether you've done a race or not. But
First time you step out your door with your tennis shoes on to run on purpose without someone else making you do it.
That's a good definition. That's a good definition. So, well, thanks again. I'm gonna switch over here and say goodbye to everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks. Thank you a lot for joining us for this edition of Trail Talk. This is something that has kind of evolved evolved from what I had thought it might be, and it's something that I've really, really enjoyed. So also, if you're seeing this on the replay, know somebody who has a great story, somebody who's a good conversationalist, and would somebody think of it this way, somebody that you would go out and run on a trail with and have an enjoyable conversation. Would be glad to have any kind of recommendations for people who could be guests on this show, or if you yourself would like to be a guest on this show. If it's like you would like to take a virtual run with me and spend an hour and share here, would be glad to talk with you. Send me a message. Also, I am an ultramarathon mindset coach, life coach. If I can help you with anything running related or going after any kind of big goal, please message me. I'd be glad to help you. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.